This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew here in the new year. Fellas, I am happy to see you. I hope you guys had a good holiday season. Hope the new year's off to a really good start, the Orange Bowl notwithstanding, of course, but hope everything else is going well. Start with you, Brian Cook, BC. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Seth Fisher, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, man. Other than that, Jackie, how was Dallas?
and Craig Ross. So got a message from a Craig Ross fan. I got a chance to meet Craig Ross at the UCF game, and it was like they met the superstar. They were so happy to have met Craig Ross at the UCF game. So I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, it was David, I think was his name. He was came down to say hi to me, recognize me for some reason, and very nice man, very thoughtful man.
Craig, your face is on a video screen for an hour every Thursday.
Well, I know, but you know, still, come on, come on. But he was a terrific guy, and so I appreciated that he came down to say hi to me.
Yeah, you know, that game, unfortunately, if you know, you could bottle your not that you would want to bottle your feelings up from that game, but certainly it would have given you an indicator of how you're going to feel about 24 hours from that point, right? When you watch the Orange Bowl as the Georgia Bulldogs win and prove the SEC narrative correct that night and really manhandled Michigan in that game in the way that same way that UCF was able to run away from Michigan in the second half on the hoop court. So let's just start there with your broad brush takes from the Orange Bowl, starting with you, Brian, as the Bulldogs won 34-11.
Well, I mean, it was a situation where you go in against a team and then you're like, oh, maybe we can do this. Yeah, because there's, you know, Alabama's been in a bunch of one score games. Maybe they're not that great. And then, like, honestly, the first play from scrimmage, they run for 9 yards, and I'm like, ooh, that's not good. that's not a good sign. And then they get linebackers isolated on their running backs a bunch and their tight end, and it's just like, okay, you know, going into this season, everybody was projecting 7-5. They were much better than that, but were they at the level where they could take on the team that most – analytics think is the best team in the country by a fair distance? No.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, was resigned, went, got a free beer though. Georgia fan was sitting next to me and I was like, hey, I'll buy you a beer. I was like, all right.
This Georgia fan is getting a lot of free press for $16.
I just want right to say. as at least like the Georgia fans were nice. They have ladies who scream "Go Dogs" a lot, which is kind of annoying. But like other than that, they're pretty good.
I had plenty of Georgia fans take huge pounds of flesh, and they deserve to. You know, with me after that game, but I came away really impressed with at least in this game. I'm not making any sort of grandiose sort of assessments beyond that game on Stetson Bennett. But Seth, I thought Stetson Bennett, I don't know what you thought of him heading into this game, but I thought that guy played terrific.
I think all of Georgia did. I don't want to just put it on their one quarterback because, like, Georgia was really well prepared for Michigan. I mean, you gave them the opportunity to scout all the things that Michigan does. And I think this just goes into what Michigan is and has been under Harbaugh. We're really good at, like, throwing a lot of looks out at you, right? And now the defense has come into that, too. Mike McDonald likes to have a lot of, you know, you don't know if he'll be in the 4-2 or the 3-3 or where he's going to play or what the rules are going to be for Aiden Hutchinson any given week. But if you scout them long enough and prepare your team long enough, they can get those things down. And Georgia had us down. There are a lot of little minute things that are coming out in UFR that, as I'm doing it now. I can't really get into them all on radio, but, like, you guys all remember the big Corum run against Iowa, right? And how that went down. And that started with a zone read by McCarthy. Well, Georgia, if you go watch, they ran the same exact play against Georgia in the first quarter. And when they do it, number one, there's one less player for the defense than Iowa had. Iowa brought their safety down. Georgia left their safety high. They're like, we don't even need that guy. And when he goes to read the edge, he's not reading some Iowa linebacker who's going to, like, flail and swing his hand around trying to grab a guy. He's reading Nolan Smith, who was the number one overall prospect on the 24/7 composite in 2019. Nolan Smith is going to the NFL very soon, I'm sure, and, like, that's the guy you're reading. And then he tried that guy on the edge the next time because that guy shuffled and can't get around him either. So Georgia has talent that Michigan had not seen this year, including against Ohio State, and they were prepared for Michigan. And when you combo those two things, you really got to have a much better game plan. I don't think we did.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the weekend was more social in some sense. I mean, we went to the UCF game, as Sam noted, and I didn't realize UCF has 71,000 students. And it's the city itself is sort of its own, or the campus itself is sort of its own little city, and it was quite interesting there. There was about 40% Michigan fans at the basketball game, I would say, which stunned me, and I think it stunned the UCF fans as to how many Michigan fans actually showed up to that game, and a lot of Michigan fans were doing the same thing we were, which was the midnight, what I was calling the midnight ride to Georgia, down to Miami after the game. I found the Georgia fans to be incredibly thoughtful and nice and pleasant. I mean, I guess it's easy when you're pounding someone, but again, coming into the game, I think they were shot. I think it was probably 60-65% Michigan fans.
I
mean, it was certainly more Michigan fans than Georgia fans. And on the first drive that Brian was referencing, was at our end of the stadium. It was loud. I mean, the fans were incredibly loud. That's a loud stadium anyway, because it's the way it's built. There's a lot of echoing. And the Michigan fans were really, really loud. It sounded almost as loud as it was in Ann Arbor for the Ohio State game, trying to induce a false start or something from Georgia, but it just didn't work. And, they were just a lot better team, is what it came down to. I mean, bigger, faster, stronger, and as Seth points out, very well prepared for us. I'm not sure this is a game we're ever really going to win. I'd like to think maybe we could play them a little closer if we'd done a few different things, but this was just a better team. It was a fun weekend, though, nonetheless. I felt like, from my point of view, I felt like, we're sort of playing with house money. I'm embarrassed to say I picked 6-6 for Michigan and the Hail to the Victors. And then when I was chastised for how stupid that was in the Observer later, I said, okay, they'll be 8-4. And then most people said, you're an idiot. They'll never win that many games. So the season itself was satisfying in the main, even with this game, at least for me.
Yeah, I had the same reaction watching them go right down the field. When they... on the opening drive, because we saw them take advantage of of a couple of things that we had seen be lingering issues. I mean, Michigan formation and pre-snap motion. They handled a bunch well in this game. They did a great job. The matchup that you were talking about, Brian, where, you know, they go 13 personnel and they take Michigan takes Dax off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you could, it was like Monken was like, I got him now, because now you got Brock Bowers with Jalen Harrell trying to run with him down the football field. And it was, I mean, they did a great job. And so this was a game where offensively, I mean, sometimes you got to pick your defense up, and offensively they weren't able to do it. And so my biggest criticism, I've never been a coach. I'm not saying this is an easy call to make at all. Maybe it's an impossible call to make, and I want to stipulate that. But if it's me, armchair quarterback, after the third series, Michigan's down 17-0, I'm playing J.J. McCarthy. Not because it's all on Cade McNamara. I'm not suggesting that in any way, shape, or form. Please understand that. But I'm playing him because I will have seen in those first three drives where Michigan actually moved the football. I mean, those weren't three and out drives. They were, what, 7-8 play drives, the first three drives. But every drive was stalled because, I mean, there needed to be a play made. The third and fourth down on the first drive, you can argue maybe they shouldn't have gone for it on fourth down. I understand that argument. It's legit to say punt there, but the play was there. The third down, the play before, they went with the wide delay. But if you watch from the stands, and I mean, Cornelius Johnson is like, man, he's throwing his arms up because he's wide open on the curl. And so through the first three drives, when you're down 17-0 at that point, and it's clear, you're going to have to light it up. At that point, I'm making the call with the guy that I think is going to give me the best chance. I'm not even saying that makes him win the game. I'm just saying, if you're going to have a chance to be in it, I think you're going to have to make a QB change in order to do it.
Well, I mean, we did have these kind of periods from McNamara all year where there are plays there to be made and he's missing the throws, and they didn't happen too often. But the bad part was when one throw kind of started going the wrong way, like those things seemed to compound. And so the Rutgers game, late in the Michigan State game, the Washington game, it kind of felt like once things started going pear-shaped that they just kept going that way. And McNamara was able to put together a couple things on that drive when they were down 17-0. He hit Roman Wilson for a big chunk, and then they couldn't punch it in. They had to settle for a field goal. So he was there and present. But I feel like, you know, when McCarthy's in there and he's slinging balls that Michigan receivers can't catch because it's getting in too fast, and he's throwing darts across the middle of the field for the touchdown, like, he gives you upside. And maybe he was too young this year, but I think a lot of people are looking at this game and saying, well, if we're going to get back to this stage and compete better, we need a quarterback who is tracking towards the first round of the NFL draft. And I don't know if McNamara is ever going to be that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they handled the quarterback situation reasonably well this year, all things considered. I guess the question is, well, what happens now? I mean, that's the real question, because I don't think playing McCarthy in this game was going to have Michigan win the game or even have it come down to the fourth quarter. I mean, I don't think that was happening. And so I don't have a lot of criticism or any real criticism of how they handled the quarterbacks this year. But what do they do now? And that's a hard question to answer, because you could see Cade leaving if the job is handed to JJ. On the other hand, don't you have to go with your high ceiling guy, particularly where maybe they need a little more offense this year, and the offensive side of the ball in this coming year looks like it may be pretty good overall, and it looks like they may have to score more points this year. They're not going to have Ojabo. They're not going to have David Aiden Hutchinson.
He hasn't declared yet. You don't know that.
Aiden declared.
Yeah, he did.
We didn't do a big post on it because, like, everyone already knew, and I, like, Hinton popped his thing at the same exact time.
And you've got Hinton going. So, I mean, I don't think the defense is going to be bereft of talent next year by any stretch of the imagination, but you're probably losing Dax Hill. Probably, I'm guessing. You're losing Ojabo, Hutchinson, Hinton. Hawkins. So my guess is Brandon Josephs is not going to Michigan, but probably Notre Dame. I don't know if Michigan is recruiting him. He's one hell of a player. But it seems to me the offensive side is where you're really going to have to win games next year, at least until your defense can stabilize. And doesn't that mean you have to go with your highest upside guy? And even if JJ is a little less consistent and is a little more error prone than Cade, isn't that the direction you can envision the coach is going on? I mean, and so I don't know. I think so, everyone thinks that it's a pedestrian idea, but I think.
Yeah, see, I really don't think it's that hard.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's my personal. Now, I also don't think you could just hand it to JJ.
No, he has to win the job.
Yeah, he has to win the job, but you have got to make it a competition. There cannot be strict deference to the incumbent because he was the pilot of the ship of a Big Ten championship winning team. And that's no small thing. And I don't mean to minimize that, but they're going to have to win games differently next year. They're going to have to be more quarterback dependent. I mean, you could see the difference in how much they were willing to put on their quarterback just in the play. Look at what they did with Stetson Bennett. Stetson Bennett had 13 RPOs in the first half of that game. In the first half of the game. And Michigan is not putting that many RPO. I mean, when Gattis first got here, they were RPO all the time.
McNamara's terrible at him. McNamara, that's the thing. He's terrible at. He's not a good reader. He's not a good zone reader, and he's not a good RPO reader. I mean, the last thing in the world that I'm worried about is Jim Harbaugh, if he's still here, making it a competition at quarterback. Like I have no fear. I have perfect faith. Whoever's coaching Michigan football, that they're going to make it a QB competition because they seem to like competition in this program. But the first drive against Georgia was like teach tape in McNamara's issues. He doesn't make great reads in RPOs, so they don't really have that option to them. They don't have that option to them in the zone read game either. He's too short. He got a ball batted. And like, no, that's a first down to Schoonmaker on third down, right? But he's short.
Yeah, but see, on that play, he passed up. And this is another thing that I don't want to make it sound like we're piling on, but you could see it from the box. Cornelius Johnson throws his arms up because he's like, man, and so it was downfield against zone. He checks that down.
He just
checks that down.
Those of us watching on TV got to see nothing because ESPN zoomed in to like between the tackles. And I'm about to get some All 22 film finally so I can watch this game. But like,
yeah, you know, they
we didn't
the
know
All
that
22.
On TV.
They
had an All 22 version that, but if you weren't watching that, then like you didn't get to see the game basically. And you know, I was watching. I was watching at Matt Demmer's house actually, and you know, there were families around, and like it was just. The opportunity was not really there to have the All 22 on as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the batted ball. I thought you were talking about the one where I think it was Hassan Haskins in the flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another one.
See, now it should have been picked up. So we got to talk about the offensive line, guys. I mean, that was a bust on the offensive line. There shouldn't have been pressure in his face. But if he's able to get the ball over that blitzer, man, it's second and 16 and the dude's going to run for 30.
Mm-hmm. At least
there's no one on him. There's no one on him.
And looking, I was in the end zone, which gave me a little bit better view on that. And I thought that was a chance that's a touchdown because there's one guy between, I think you're right. I think it's Haskins between Haskins and the goal line. I like my odds on that one. And
it's not on him because they did not have. I mean, the protection was not nearly as good. You credit Georgia. I don't know. I also don't want to make it sound like Michigan was just making all these mistakes. Georgia forced these mistakes. N'Kobe Dean is unbelievable. That dude is a ball player, which was clear on film, is clear in person. But you needed more playmaking ability at the quarterback position to even have a chance in this game. You probably still don't win it, to your point, Craig, and I'm not suggesting they would have even be in it. I think you had to have more at that. You need to be able to match with, at least what Stetson Bennett was doing, which I got to eat crow on that. I absolutely thought that Michigan in the battle of the quarterbacks, even though they don't play one another, I thought that Michigan was in better shape, and Stetson Bennett came out, and he had to even surprise their fans, Brian, because their fans heading into this game, they weren't talking up Stetson Bennett like he was that guy. He played like that guy in this game.
No, I think he probably hit every deep shot he took in this game. Was as that if he missed one, it was like one or two. And you know, he's a guy who exists as a game manager, and he played out of his mind, and so that led to a 27-point first half. And yeah, I think that there is a version of this game where Bennett plays more to his level over the course of the season, and Michigan sticks in it longer. And then hypothetically, in that case, if you have JJ McCarthy in there playing well, then you might be able to pull off an upset, but not against that Stetson Bennett, no sir. I mean, to your point about like the kind of things that McCarthy lets you do, just the ability to have that guy be your runner 4 or 5 times a game really changes the amount of stuff you can do on the ground, and it changes how effective you can be in the red zone. And you know, I love Blake Corum, but there's a reason Hassan Haskins was the short yardage back this year. And they don't really seem to have a guy who's going to fill that role. I mean, maybe Dunlap comes through and becomes a short yardage back. He's supposed to be a bruiser. But I think that there's going to be a pretty big downgrade from there just because Haskins was so good at creating 2 yards out of no yards. And so having that run threat from the quarterback position is something that I think Michigan is going to need to do if they're going to maintain any of that short yardage ability next year.
One other thing, though, even though, yeah, they will, I mean, I'm obviously a huge Haskins fans, and that will be something they don't have or will be somewhat of a downgrade next year. On the other hand, I think Donovan Edwards adds a new dimension in the pass game, particularly with J.J. McCarthy. I mean, now you've got a guy who is a good running back from what we saw. He looked pretty good. But who's also a phenomenal wide receiver and a guy who can also throw it. And so you've got an extra dimension or an extra potential dimension in the offense next year as his playing time increases.
And that's something Gattis has always been good at. I mean, you look at where Gattis comes from, right? Remember, he was at Penn State with Saquon Barkley. They threw the ball to the running backs a lot when he was at Alabama.
Yeah.
At Vanderbilt, they threw the ball to the running backs there too. Like that's stuff. And he immediately knew what to do. Like as soon as they had Donovan Edwards ready to go, we saw some really cool stuff and really smart ways that they used him in the offense. And I'm sure that was Gattis. Like there's a lot of times where we're like, oh, that's Harbaugh running the offense. But that was vintage Gattis stuff. And I think that you're going to see a lot of that next year. I absolutely agree that Haskins is a huge loss. You can't lose a guy like Hassan Haskins. He was way better running back than anybody ever imagined he was going to be, except for Craig Ross, who like saw his freshman film and was like, this guy's awesome. but I mean, you're not going to replace Hassan Haskins, no matter if you go to the portal, if you get another guy at the, you know, in February, whatever, you're not going to replace Hassan Haskins. I do think that if people watch this Georgia tape and they try to apply that to playing Michigan next year, you're just going to get beat. Georgia got away with what they got away with because they could play that way. They had two safeties back, and that changes the way that you can attack them. Michigan was a big play team this year, right? I think we had more 50-plus yard plays than any other team in the country. Well, you can't do that if a team can leave two safeties back all the time, but they don't. When you play Michigan, we force those safeties to come up, right? They have to stack the box against you, and Michigan invited that because they had Haskins who would get them 4 yards even if he does run into a safety at the one, right? But if you can't get that safety to come down because they can guard you anyway because they got N'Kobe Dean and all these other monsters up front, I mean, that's – no one else is going to be able to do that. I mean, no one else can be like, oh, I got N'Kobe Dean.
Yeah. That dude was a ball player. I mean, he tracked Blake Corum down.
I know. Yeah, that was the moment where all hope fled my body. Like that's like ideal. That's what you want. You have Blake Corum running a swing pass against a linebacker in man coverage. that is an RPS win, and that's a 2-yard tackle for loss because of N'Kobe Dean. And I'm just like, well, now I know what it was like to be a fan of team playing Devin Bush.
Right.
It sucks. I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, the comparison to Dean to Bush is a good one. I mean, those guys are very similar players, just phenomenal linebackers.
Aiden Hutchinson to N'Kobe Dean in the first round. Let's go. Let's go, Lions.
No, don't do it. Take anybody except Aiden. Take Kayvon Thibodeau. He's much better, and I don't care about his career being wasted with the Lions.
I hope you're wrong, Brian Cook. But hey, I do want you guys, and you sort of alluded to this a little bit already, but your overall, this was a disappointing finish to the season in every respect. Georgia won every aspect of this game, as I've been saying. They from players to coaches, offense, defense, they won every matchup. So give them credit. Certainly Michigan didn't play its best game, but Georgia had a lot to do with that. That being said, I want your perspective on the season. This was a disappointing finish, but are you disappointed in the season?
What, who would, if you find one Michigan fan who's disappointed in this season, you send him to me and I will put him on the first bus to Mars.
Well,
who's going to bus
to Mars?
Yeah. I'll hook up with Elon Musk. I'll be like, Muskie, I got an astronaut for you. I call him Muskie because we're bros. Anyway,
I'm sure you guys are. You look at the MGO blog Twitter feed. You see all kind of ne'er-do-well fans say, this shows they'll never.
No,
be able
I
to
call
do
them,
it.
Man. If somebody who has that take has probably had other takes in the past and therefore already hit the block, right?
Yeah, I give people a pass for like in-game posting, right? Because everybody's in their feelings. I've posted some things I shouldn't have posted. They're posting some things they shouldn't post. But in the cold light of day on January 6th, anybody who is disappointed with the outcome of this season needs to seek psychiatric treatment.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, this was a phenomenal year for Michigan. I mean, truly, the Michigan State game was a game that Michigan should not have lost. And beyond that, you know, no one, even as the team beat Penn State and was coming down to the finish, thought that they were going to beat Ohio State, let alone beat Ohio State by 15, and in an incredible environment. So, no, this was a great year. It's a year that I think most fans will remember in incredibly positive terms. So no, anyone who thinks this is somehow disappointing is just wrong. I mean, their instincts are completely muddled.
So the beginning of the season, like we were all saying, 7-5 was generally the take, and then I adjusted that up to 8-4 as well right before the season. Not because I saw anything in Michigan when I was doing the previewing, but like I saw Michigan's opponents. Right, I was like, oh, Wisconsin's probably not that good. Penn State a lot more wobbly than people realize. I didn't believe in Michigan State at all. And those teams have not gotten substantially better in the offseason. So, I mean, this is another trip where if you're a good team like they were this year, they were a really good team. I mean, you're going to have to replace Aiden Hutchinson next year. That changes everything, right? So they're going to have to find some ways to win on defense intelligently if they want to get back and compete. This year, I mean, this is the 1969 season. This was you punch Ohio State and punch them so bad that they're still wallowing on the internet. They're still upset. They're still having problems, right? And like, okay, you lost to Michigan State. They came up and bit you, but everyone knows how that went down. Even the playoff committee was like, don't really think that one was legit. I'm not saying it. The playoff committee is saying it. All right,
I'm saying it.
But like, that was your season. That was your season. It was the 69 season, and like, I know that they got to work out Jim Harbaugh's contract. They're going to have to work out NIL because it's a new world out there, and they're going to have to figure out how they're going to compete in it. Things don't just stay static. Things are going to change. But I love this team. And I want to get this out because there's we're really bad as analysts talking about, you know, the heart of the team, or like what we, it's hard for us to like pick that out, right? But you could definitely feel there was something about this team. And you know, I got Hill Green's jersey up on my my wall right now because he shouted out the fans and said, "We love you guys, and I love this team so much." And that was in reply to me, and I was like, "Man, thank you, thank you. You get your jersey up there." But I mean, that's this team is just so easy to like. And there's been a lot of Michigan teams, honestly, where you're like, you know, you had to pull yourself along to like them. And I mean, this team pulled everybody in, and that's going to affect Michigan for a very long time.
It was a fantastic ride, man. It was a fantastic ride. That Ohio State game, the feeling, it just, you could feel it before the ball was kicked.
Yeah.
It was unreal. Just the atmosphere. You just knew it was going to be a special day. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that as a fan. And that this team, Team 142, gave us that moment, gave us that time down in Indianapolis. I mean, yeah, the Orange Bowl sucked, but it doesn't erase everything that happened before it. It was fantastic. Now, as you look ahead, we got to get to a break. The point, and all you guys have made this point, they have got to compensate for the losses defensively with more offense. By more offense, I mean, I think they're going to have to be more diverse. I don't think they can score as many points as they need to score playing the same way they played this year. They could play offense the way they played this year and I think still be wildly successful. I just think they got to put more points on the board, and I think that demands more diversity offensively. It demands more playmaking at the quarterback position. And I don't want to discount Cade McNamara's ability to maybe do it, because who had Stetson Bennett beating out five-star JT Daniels, right? None of them did. Hell, you still had Georgia fans saying JT Daniels. So, hey, with experience under his belt, another offseason, maybe Cade is able to beat out JJ, but there needs to be a competition to really shake that out. I expect there to be. I think number 9 is going to be hard to beat, personally. Just my opinion. We'll see how it goes, fellas. I want your take on that on the other side. And then we got to talk some basketball, because I think that the importance of this Michigan State game, I'm trying not to overstate it, but I think it's really important to the tournament outlook for this team. And I'm curious you guys' take on that as well. We'll get to that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Clear on the radio.
Yeah, so have you guys heard any details about what happened with in the handshake line at Rutgers?
No. I've heard nothing about it. I mean, Juwan said he was turned the other way. Martelli said he didn't know. I mean, hell, Martelli knows and Juwan knows what happened, of course, but they're not going to say it. I mean, my guess is someone started getting in Caleb Houston's face. Mm-hmm. And Musa didn't like it. And so Musa, you know, came to the aid of his friend and teammate. And that's my guess. And yeah. What was said, we'll never know. But, you know.
Probably said that's not a 5-star.
Yeah.
I turned it off with like 30 seconds to go. So I completely missed this.
Yeah, that's what I heard happen, that Ron Harper had been chirping the whole game.
Yeah, he was talking.
He was talking the whole game, and then he decided he had some more things to say in the handshake line to Caleb, and Musa wasn't buying it.
Yeah.
And personally, if that's what happened, yes. Give me more of that.
Yeah. As long as Musa doesn't take a punch at someone, I was okay with it. I was okay with that too. But you don't want, you know.
You don't want that, but I mean, I think this team could use a little bit of that. I think they could use a little bit of that fire. I mean, for whatever that contributes to their on-court performance, I don't know if it'll make a difference. Yeah. I just know I like to see it. I know that it'll be something that helps them versus a Michigan State team that is absolutely. I mean, when isn't their game plan to come in and try to punk you? Just like I just said to Phil. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they do.
Well, Phil also said you gotta taste the blood in your mouth, and I then I was like, yeah, that's probably That had something to do with it too. Ron Harper gets to talk after that game.
Yeah, guarding the 3-point line and hitting threes. Like, golly, man,
At one point, I mean, UCF made either their last 8 or 9 threes in a row, and then Rutgers comes out and makes their first 4 in a row. Now, I don't. You could have Steph Curry out there not checked and just playing a game of horse, and he's probably not making 13 in a row, you know. But yet, that's what happened to Michigan in these two. So there was some bad fortune, and most of these are check shots. I mean, they're not like unchecked threes. They were 1 or 2.
Back in about 15 seconds, guys.
But you know, they teams are just making them.
Mm-hmm,
Matt,
mm-hmm.
We'll get into on the other side. We'll get into what Matt D thinks, because he's been he's got his own theory on that.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. In my personal postscript to the season, I certainly thanked all of all of the guys who contributed to the analysis over the course of the year, from Devin to Jack Miller, from Al Borges to Vance Bedford. But you guys, you three, I mean, you have been sort of the anchor to the analysis on a weekly basis for the longest stretch with us. I appreciate the hell out of you. Like, I know you guys put a lot of work into it. I don't know if people realize how much time it takes to go over this film play by play and break down every nuance of it. I know, and I know you guys have been doing that for years. I appreciate the effort. I appreciate the attention to detail, and I appreciate how you guys come on every week, win or lose, to talk about it, man. That's not lost on me. And so I wanted to tell you guys that appreciation will never go away. So thanks for doing it again in this most fantastic year since I've been watching Michigan football. So appreciate you guys.
Sam, thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Sam.
Incredibly kind.
I also want to shout out Alex Drain, who's our other guy who's watching the film like this. He did. He took over for me for the faux film, the reached watching the other team. And every week he was pointing out something that, like, when you went and saw the game, you're like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what they do. Sometimes even things that our coaches didn't see. So, I mean, he's been really great, and I'm really excited that we got him on board.
Yeah, Alex is incredible. I mean, he's obsessive. He loves sports. He loves Michigan sports. I think he came in with you guys as primarily a hockey guy. And
he was a dude sitting next to us on MGO Radio when we did the live shows. Yeah, he would be sitting there. He was just in charge. Yeah, he took over for Morris Fabry.
Well, I did a podcast that you guys put up on MGO blog with Alex and Dave Nasternak. And I was stunned. Dave said he wanted to talk tennis. And I said, okay, I can talk tennis. And so I was stunned at how much Alex knew about tennis. I mean, he's a stone cold tennis expert.
Oh, and don't try him on the Lions either. We could go for a while.
Oh, he talks Lions? Oh, yeah. Man, we got to get together with Alex.
I want to be a part of the Lions thing.
Especially if they take Aiden. If they take Aiden, we got to get a Lions show started. Alex, come on, man. Aiden to the Lions.
I did a show on here with you guys with like the Lions, with my kid's Lions costume on my head.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
That show was coming, folks. Be on the lookout if they take Aiden, but only if they take Aiden. But let's shift over and talk some basketball, guys. And, you know, obviously this is not a team that is where we thought it would be at this point. I think I'm safe in saying that for all of us, is they are now 1-2 in Big Ten conference play. I think 7-6 overall, and with a Michigan State team that's much better than I thought they would be. And as Michigan sort of fights for tournament viability, I think it's fair to say. And then you look at the rest of the Big Ten. This row is going to be a lot tougher to hold. I mean, who did you guys think was Johnny Davis has been unbelievable? Keegan Murray has been unbelievable. Suddenly the rest of the Big Ten is looking even tougher. So when you look at Michigan State coming to town, it's a home game. you know, what marquee wins do you have on the schedule or on your resume so far? It feels like this game, the importance of it, the significance of it as it relates to, you know, tournament viability, feels like it's huge, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously huge. I mean, they're really up against it now. They came out of the non-conference with like zero quality wins. They've lost to Rutgers. Like I think it's going to be a very hard road to get to the tournament. And yeah, any win over a top 20 KenPom team is going to be a major lift towards that. I just we don't have any idea if who's going to be available for this game. I mean, they can't put Caleb Houston on the bench because there's no one else to play right now, and he's really struggling. They don't have any wings. Like, I looked at this roster preseason, and I'm like, all right, Caleb Houston can just play the three. He's a four. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a single guy who's like a 6'5", 6'6" guy who can check other guys who's an athlete. There's no Charles Matthews. There's no Isaiah Livers. There's no Franz Wagner. There's no wing.
There's no Shondi Brown.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had a ton of super athletic, excellent defensive wings this last year, and now they have none. And that downgrade has been crippling.
Well, yeah, after game two, if you'll recall, something Martelli said really resonated for me. I love Coach Martelli, and he said something like, you play against yourself, you know, and that's so true in basketball, and it's why I think you can tell a lot about a team early in the season. And after game two, I came on and said, I don't know if this team can make the tournament or not. And people went nuts on me on internet saying, well, limited data points, blah, blah, blah. But and they're right, of course. But you can tell when, you know, how teams are playing against themselves, and this team just didn't seem to have it. And the other thing that bothered me was I didn't see where the shooting was coming from. And I had watched, as I pointed out, had watched Caleb all summer in the European tournament. And I said, look, he's a good player, and he's got a high ceiling, and he's going to be a really good basketball player. And I still think that. But I'm not sure he's a three-point shooter, at least right now. And
I remember that.
And so one of the, I mean, if you look at their last four losses, I mean, Michigan's been very unlucky, especially in Rutgers and UCF. I mean, they shot 23 of 43 from three. I mean, that's whatever that is, 46%. Michigan is shooting, you know, not nearly. I mean, in fact, in the four losses, the opposition's 37 of 80. We're 22 of 76. So that's 45 points we've lost from the three-point line. And that's just not something that's conducive to winning games. And so even if everything else is good, you're still losing points right and left from the three line. Some of that's bad luck. Some of it's the fact that Michigan just doesn't shoot it great from three, and they're not a consistent three shooting team at all. And I don't know where that offense is coming from right now. And then you've got the defensive issues. I mean, they're trying hard. This isn't a question of not trying, but they've got limitations, particularly, well, actually, really, at the point and at the wings, and keeping guys in front of them. So, I mean, yeah, you're right, Sam. I mean, if they're going to make the tournament, they got to beat Michigan State. Anybody think they're really going to beat Michigan State? And I've watched Michigan State a lot. I mean, the kid from Ipsy is phenomenal. And Izzo's finally not yelling at him, and they're playing him. And the less he gets yelled at and the more he plays, the better he gets. What's it, Gabe Brown? Kid is good, and they've got a good defensive team, and they're going to smack you in the face because that's what they do. Are we going to beat that team? I don't. Even in Ann Arbor, I don't know. We're going to have to shoot the ball. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
You look at the slate. I mean, Michigan State, Purdue, and Illinois. Like, golly.
Whew.
It's a really tough stretch here.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, I mean to me, KenPom has Michigan going 16-14 with 10-10 in the Big Ten. I'm having a hard time seeing 10 wins. But even if they do finish 10-10 of the Big Ten at 16-14, are they going to make the tournament on that?
I mean Michigan's been underperforming KenPom. 16-14, I don't think so. Michigan's underperforming KenPom because KenPom uses predictive models. KenPom uses the fact that, like, you know, their teams are not going to be making 8 threes in a row all the time. Yeah. And there's truth to that. Michigan's been a little bit unlucky, especially the last two games. But it's also, I mean, you look at some of their stats, they are dead last in the country in turnover percentage. That's part of Michigan's DNA, right? Michigan doesn't force turnovers. Michigan's going to let you shoot the ball. Right. They are one of the worst teams in the country at, or one of the best teams at preventing assists, right? Because you don't have to pass the ball. You don't have to create, you just get your matchup and then move the ball around and you know, Caleb's going to miss a switch, or Devontae Jones is not going to know where to go all of a sudden, and boom, you got an open guy at three. And then if he's not open, they still shoot over you. And how many times have we seen, you know, contested shots? Well, those shots are contested, but Eli Brooks is only going to get so high and only going to get, you know, so he can only get so close to somebody who is 6'5". Goes back to what Brian's saying. We don't have those athletic wings out there who can take away those shots. Most teams, you get the ball out there and you're contested. You don't even put that up. Michigan, you're going to put it up because you can see over him. And that's Michigan's got that DNA problem, and they're going to have to look at themselves and say, who are we? You know, maybe you do let Devontae Jones go out and try to steal the ball now because, where else are you getting defense from him? Maybe, you know, Caleb Houston has to be a four and he uncovers up Jackson or something, or, you know, get one of these young guys into the rotation so that you have some of that lineup ability to match up with these guys. The way that we're constructed right now, the scout is way too easy. Everyone's using the same exact strategy. It's just shoot over them.
Yeah. And then, like I said, you look around the Big Ten, you survey the area, and there have been just some, did either you guys see Wisconsin or Iowa see the emerging stars that they have coming? I know that the Iowa people were saying Keegan Murray was coming, but who really believed him, right?
I did.
You did?
Yeah, you saw Keegan Murray last year and you're like, that guy's going to be a star. Jonathan Davis came out of nowhere for me. I still don't believe that he's that good, but yeah, Keegan Murray, he is. See it. Yeah, I'm just making a joke, but yeah, Keegan Murray last year, he was just like, yeah, next year when Luke is gone, they're going to be relying on this guy and they're going to be excellent. Well, he's going to be excellent. They're still not going to play any defense.
Yeah, they're still not going to play any defense, but they're still a really good offensive team. Of course, they almost always are a good offensive team. Yeah, they lost Wieskamp too, right? And they lost
the kid who transferred to Kentucky. So
yeah, he's a phenomenal shooter. Yeah, so they lost two good shooters and players in Wieskamp and the other guy who I'm blocking.
Frederick,
and they lose Garza, and they're good. I mean, they're a good team. You know, a lot is how teams are constructed. I mean, and it's not, I don't want to do this, and it's not fair to ever compare Beeline teams to Howard teams. I think Juwan is a phenomenal coach. I hope he stays for a long time. I think he has a great staff. But Beeline had this ability to somehow put these stray parts together and become more than the sum of the parts. And I'm not right now with the Michigan team, and maybe it's just because they're so young. But it's hard to see how these parts fit together. And I'm not sure how any coach can fit them together in a way that really works.
Yeah, this is the bad thing about it is everything that you're saying is like, okay, well, that can't be fixed right now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not sure it can be fixed by coaching. I mean, if they start making shots all of a sudden from three, great. I mean, I'm there. I'm hoping. I'm cheering. But, you know, at this juncture, it's hard to see how that happens. But
I mean, who's making shots from three? Because like the guys who've been taking them recently have been like, you know, Musa Diabate and Hunter Dickinson, and I don't know. I don't expect You know, Diabate is hitting 3-9 so far. I would not expect him to hit better than 33%. You know, Hunter Dickinson's at about 30%. Like, that's way better than I thought he would be. That's you're not going to get any better shooting from those guys at three. And I don't want to be one of these people who says you can't play the two of them together. But if you're playing the two of them together, you have to be running the right sets for them. And then you have to be able to get the other guys, when they do get open, they have to be able to make those shots. And, I, you know, that's... Eli's been hitting at a good clip on the average. Caleb is not. And, I mean, that's really what it comes down to is, like, you know, Caleb Houston's got to make his shots because Devontae Jones is going to come down from where he is. You're not going to get better shooting from anybody else. You know, everybody else is pretty much at their career expectation or way above it. So you're not getting better than that.
You mentioned Devontae Jones. I asked Phil about this. I said, hey, he obviously will come down from 7 for 8 over two games, right? But you can't shoot 7 for 8 in two games and then not take one in the next game. I couldn't figure that part out. Like, how does he not
there's a problem there in that he does not have a jump shot. He, like X, he's a set shooter on the, you know, which is hard when you're 6 feet tall to get a set shot off. The issue, though, is unlike X, is X could take it to the basket, and teams were very wary of giving him any room. They don't seem to this point so worried about Devontae. And so the reason why he didn't get any shots is because he didn't have any. And and so I don't know. Again, it's a question of how do all these pieces fit together? Is there anything really the coaches can do to make them fit together, or are they just pounding square pegs into these round holes? Mm-hmm.
They're trying. I mean, they're throwing.
They're
Kobe
trying.
Buffett
that
in
isn't
there.
An issue, and the coaching staff is smart and good. I mean, but
they know that they need another guy that they don't have right now. They need a Kobe or they need Zeb. They need one of those guys to pop and be able to pull somebody who's starting off the court. You know, they thought they would get something out of Brandon Johns this year. They haven't. I know he's not even available right now. And Brian mentioned that, too. We're going to the Michigan State game, and you don't even know if your half your team's going to be there. So,
can you imagine if Izzo was down to eight guys? If he was down to eight guys – with, you know, and is playing Nunez and Jace.
Yeah, all these weird guys he'd be talking
I mean, can you imagine how crazy he'd be going? And I thought, man, Juwan was a man after that game. He said there was no complaining. He just said, hey, we got eight guys. We think we can win with the eight guys.
Well, it's because the only guy that drew in was his son. He was like, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, Jace didn't play terribly, incidentally. I mean, he
got a little
okay.
Lost on defense, but, yeah, he did all right. I mean, for your, you know, fifth or sixth number four, you did pretty good.
Yeah. So next week we got because I hope to get in a bit of a hockey update this week. We're out of time, so plan on that next week, guys.
Okay.
As we talk about the Icers a bit, and then we'll reflect on this gauntlet week for Michigan basketball, Michigan State, Purdue, and Illinois. Ooh, well, we won't be able to reflect on the Illinois game, but the first two we will. So hopefully we'll have some good things to talk about. Always great to talk to you fellas. Thanks again for coming on. Happy New Year to all of you in the chat. We'll see you next week as well here. MGO Blog Roundtable, the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
5, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Bust the ass.